Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 278, recorded December 23rd, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers. As you may have noticed, Gwen has joined us today. Kelly is going to be around. She'll be in on most of the podcast, but she is not feeling well enough to be able to talk on the podcast. Her voice has been affected by the malady that is currently afflicting her, unfortunately. So we're going to have Gwen step in and read for us. So, who is going to contribute to the podcast today, Gwen?
Maren in Melbourne, Australia. Joan Hudson, Mississippi?
No, Michigan.
Okay, that's Michigan.
Good guess, though.
Tony in New York. Mick in Carnforth, United Kingdom. Tara in New York.
Okay, and who's the first one?
Maren in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay, well, welcome, Maren. This is the first time Maren has ever contributed to the podcast that I know of, so welcome.
Hello, Russ and Kelly. I'm new to aquariums and have slowly set up a neat little 34-liter, 9-ish gallons, I think, over the last few months. I have a few plants, some real and some plastic, and some driftwood. I was going to get some cute little guppies until I saw this guy in the photo. He is great and seems very happy in the tank. Within days, he has learned to jump at my finger for food. I also have added some pearl shell red ramshorn snails to hopefully keep the algae at bay. Plus, I think they are a great contrast to the green and brown of the tank. I have heard some conflicting reports of the snails, but because I think they look pretty and I don't want to scrape algae off the grass and the driftwood and the larger leaves on my plants, I decided to give them a try.
Oh, it's supposed to say give them a try, I think.
Okay, give them a try. However, I have noticed today that my grass is crawling with teeny white worms. How do I get rid of the grass without harming my intentional tank inhabitants? Will they affect my fish or snails? Obviously, a water change is in order. I have been changing about 50% once a week, partly to remove the tannin stains from the driftwood, too. The filter I have is built into the back of the tank. Not sure how to describe it. Thanks. Maren in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay. Well, some good questions and comments there. I would say the first thing is that I have kept ramshorn snails with fish. I've done it quite a bit. It can be fine as long as, you know, the tank doesn't have a lot of extra food in there, then they usually do okay. But as soon as they get a little extra food, they will tend to breed like crazy and overrun the tank. So if you're feeding very sparingly and your fish eats all of the food that you put in there, and you know, you're not feeding him a lot, then they should do all right. You may need to control them, you know, remove some periodically and so on. But
what are the grubs?
The grubs? Oh, we'll talk about that in just a minute. Yeah, that's a good question, Gwen. I really like ramshorn snails, and I've kept them without problem. So I would say they're fine as long as, you know, there's not too much food in the tank. I'll give an example of how that can be a problem. We had a bristlenose placo breeding tank, and in order to feed the babies, we needed to put bits of vegetables and algae chips. So there were zucchini rounds and slices of yam, and there were peas and green beans and things being put in the tank all the time for the little fish, and algae chips, if I haven't mentioned that yet. And unfortunately, those are just the sorts of things that ramshorn snails like to eat as well. And so the ramshorn snails went really crazy in there. So we had to put a couple of assassin snails in to take care of them. That would be an example of what can happen. They'll really breed like crazy if they have enough food to do it. If they're relying mostly on the algae that might be on the glass, they will not breed as much. However, they will not eat every type of algae. They will help keep the glass clean to some extent, but not as well as some other snails. And they will definitely eat ailing plant leaves. They don't necessarily go after healthy plant leaves as long as they're not starving, but they will go after, you know, dead and dying plant leaves as well. So there you go. You can give them a try. Lots of people do it. Let's talk about the little worms. Okay. It could be... I looked at the pictures that you sent, and we'll post these on the page, that the worms are very small planaria, not likely to get a lot bigger. And that's the good news about them. That's part of the good news. It's also possible that they are copepods, which are a type of crustacean, not a worm at all, but they look worm-like. And at that small size, it's hard to see them clearly, but they look very worm-like. I have a tank that actually has some of those worm-like copepods. It's our daughter's axolotl tank has a few of them in that, and it doesn't cause any problem. There are not a lot of them. There are just a few. They won't harm anything, if that's what they are. If they are the planaria, then they won't really cause a problem either, but it's usually a sign of a little extra food in the tank. So as you decrease the quantities of food in the tank, then they will decrease as well. So they are not harmful, and I wouldn't worry a lot about them. Getting rid of them, there are a couple of things you can try. You can try an anti-worm medicine, an anti-helminthic medicine, like Panacure. I would look into that and research it very carefully if you decide to do that. You might look into Paragard, which is similar in intention. It's made for aquariums and so on. So I think Paragard's the one I'm thinking of. You can look into that. Be careful with dosages. Also, I would check to see whether that's going to cause a problem for snails. I don't think it does, but it shouldn't cause any problems for the fish or the plants. But the snails, it might. So I would look into that first. But other than that, if you're content to leave them there and just decrease the amount of food that you're offering, you probably won't see very many of them anymore. And that would be the most natural approach and probably the healthiest. And that's the one I recommend the most. Just one other note. I think your tank looks very nice here in the pictures that I can see, but the plant that is in the second picture that you sent at the bottom, there's a big leaf in the foreground. I love that plant. It's sometimes called aluminum plant or friendship plant or whatever, and the genus name is Pilea, P-I-L-E-A, and the species name is Cadierae or something like that. It's a C-A-D-I-E-R-E-I. That's a lovely plant. However, it's more of a terrarium plant or a potted plant than an aquarium plant. It will last underwater for a number of months, quite a few months, in fact, but it's not going to thrive, and it will eventually just die off. It's sad news because it is a nice plant. And it's often sold as an aquarium plant, strangely enough, probably because it will survive for so many months that people think, oh, I just killed my poor little aquarium plant. But really, they didn't. They killed their terrestrial plant. So, for what it's worth, there you go. I'm sorry that somebody sold you that as an aquarium plant. And depending on what you choose to do, I mean, now that it's in the tank, it's not going to hurt to leave it there in terms of... the tank in general, the tank environment, until it starts to rot, and in which case you'd need to take it out. But if you want the plant to keep living, you'll have to remove it from that situation. I can see in the photo also behind the driftwood there's another plant, but I believe that one is an artificial plant. And then on the left there are a couple more plants, and I can't quite tell what they are from the photo. One of them looks kind of like lucky bamboo, which is not a bamboo actually, it's a dracaena plant. It's from the genus Dracaena, and that one is also one that's not going to survive indefinitely when it's underwater completely. Part of it, its roots can be underwater indefinitely, but the whole plant itself can't. And if that is indeed what that is, I'm sorry to tell you that that's the same situation, but it will survive for a while underwater. All right, well, I hope that helps, and welcome to Aquarimax Marin.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99.
Okay, who's next, Gwen?
Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan. Michigan.
Yes.
You're Hi, right. Russ and Kelly. Any tips to pruning my compactosaurids? I am getting new leaves like crazy lately, and I want to get rid of some of the originals, kind of ratty looking. Thanks, as always, for the info and tips on demand. Joe in Hudson, Michigan.
Okay. So, there's a couple of things that we can talk about here with swords. It's actually been a while since I've kept sword plants, but I have kept them, and I like them a lot. I would just say make sure that you're pruning those outer leaves, which are the ones that are likely to become ratty looking. You know, it's a rosette plant coming, you know, the new leaves come out from the middle, as you know. So you can either pinch or cut off the other leaves near the base of the leaf, base of the petiole, I guess, where it's coming off of the plant. And that's all. You don't have to worry about it a whole lot. As soon as they get ratty and you don't like them anymore, cut them off and they'll be fine.
Okay.
If you notice that almost all the plants' leaves are getting like that, then there's an issue. But as long as it's just the outer, older leaves, should be good. Okay. Who have we got next?
Tony from New York. Hello, Aquarimax. Tony from New York here. I've been enjoying the show, especially the discussion on red cherry shrimp. I noticed this bit of aquarium news, as well that I felt... I noticed this bit of aquarium news as well that I felt you and the listeners might enjoy. Tony from New York.
Okay, and what he has sent is a link to a giant salamander, a giant Chinese salamander, that is about 200 years old, that was discovered in a remote area and removed to an aquarium for safety, because the area in China, unfortunately, this species of salamander is in a lot of trouble. Its environment, its habitat is being destroyed, and the salamander is harvested for eating and for medicine and so on. So they removed it from the place where they found it for its own safety, and they dated it as about 200 years old, and it's now 4.5 feet long and could eventually get longer. They can get up to about 6 feet long. So we'll put the link to the video up on the show page if you want to check it out. It's quite the interesting creature. They're very prehistoric looking, I think. What did you think about it?
I thought it was very surprising.
Very surprising? What was surprising about it for you?
The way that it looked like a giant axolotl.
Yeah, kind of did, huh? All right. Well, thank you, Tony. And let's go on to the next one.
Mick in Carnforth, United Kingdom. Hi, guys. I have found a YouTube link to a Sky News item featuring the stranded bull sharks I made mention in my last email.
And we checked that out, didn't we? We looked at it. It's quite interesting. There are these, I can't remember the number of bull sharks, but there are several bull sharks.
It says it was like 12, I think.
Was it 12? I don't remember. But it said they were stranded due to flooding in a lake in this golf course, and it showed them swimming around in there with their dorsal fins, and you could see more than just their dorsal fins out of the water, because when they go into the shallow parts of the lake, you could see their tail fins and everything kind of thrashing around in there. And apparently they've been there for a long time, and I think the video said that they were even breeding.
It did.
Which is crazy. So the lake must be at least a brackish water, fairly, you know, close to ocean strength water, because I know bull sharks can survive in fresh water for a while, but they can't survive indefinitely.
It looked to my pretty understanding. Like gray and weedy from the video.
The water did? Yeah, well, brackish means it's got some salt water in it, some fresh water. So apparently they're doing okay in there. That was crazy. So we'll put that on the show page too. Thanks, Mix, for sending it in.
I have taken in a few goldfish that were abandoned in a basement flat, which was flooded up. Two black moors, two red ryukin, and a couple of shubs. They are all doing well in their holiday tank at Fangs and Fins. On the subject of using woods and natural products in aquariums, I have always loved the naturalistic type of aquarium setup, but agree that going outdoors to collect random woods is a good exercise, but fraught with potential nasties that can cause problems in a home aquarium. I have a large tank in the shop upstairs and in the prep kitchen, which I use to condition woods for 2 to 3 weeks minimum before I put them in my stock tanks. I also have dry woods available, but I usually sell more of the ready-to-go woods from my shop tanks. That way people can just take them home and have none of the hassle. It also means that customers can get a good idea of how the wood looks in an aquarium and can make a choice that suits their setup. Also, using the aquarium safe stone from a good shop means that you shouldn't get unusual things dissolving over time, which causes very hard to detect problems. When you consider how much we spend on our fish and aquariums, overall it makes sense not to cut corners on things we add for decor, which we don't really cost that much, or at least are very reasonable priced at Fangs and Fins. So wishing you and aquarium extras everywhere a fantastically fishy Christmas and a particularly Biscayne New Year, and not forgetting those closet Repti fans too. Best fishes, Mick.
All right, thank you, Gwen. Well, I'm glad to hear that those goldfish found a good home with you. It's nice that some of the creatures that were left homeless aren't anymore. So that's good to hear. And I'm glad that you mentioned that about how you keep the woods in your shop. That's something to look for. Those of you who are looking for driftwood, if you can find a shop that does that and pre-treats the wood, then you have the best of all possible situations. I like also how Mick pointed out that you get to see how the wood actually looks in an aquarium underwater, so you can choose one. And the same with stones, like you said, it's good to mention that too. We hadn't mentioned that when we were talking about driftwood, so I'm glad you brought that up. A lot of different things. It's not just calcium carbonate that can leach out of the stones. You can get other types of things, conceivably heavy metals and other things too. So, good point. And the same to you, Mick. I hope you have a fantastically fishy Christmas and a particularly Piscine New Year. And then we have one more contributor today.
Tara in New York. Dear Aquariumax, I am Tara from New York. I am 6. I have a fish tank. My fish tank has Java moss, 3 zebra danios, 3 white clouds, and a nerite snail. I want a betta. Will it go well with my tank? Thank you, Tara. P.S. It is 10 gallons.
Well, welcome, Tara. We're glad to hear from you. We've heard about you, so you're kind of famous. But now we actually get to hear from you, so that's great. We're going to think about this for a second here. Okay, so your tank has Java moss, zebra danios, white clouds, and a nerite snail. You want to put a betta in there. Okay, in a 10-gallon tank, it is possible. I think you could probably do it. But let's think about a couple of things. One of them is that the temperature that white clouds like is usually a little bit cooler than that of bettas. If you put the tank at 78 degrees, though, I think the white clouds will be okay. They probably won't try to breed at that temperature, but in a tank with a betta and a zebra danios, you're not going to have any fry that survive anyway, so I don't think that's that big of a deal. Zebra danios are very adaptable to different temperatures, and they should be comfortable at 78. The nerite snail should be okay at that temperature, too. And Java moss won't grow very fast at that temperature, but it will grow, and it will survive. It'll be okay. If you really want to go with a betta, I think you could. I don't think that's a big problem. There are a couple of things still to think about, though. The betta might attack your nerite snail. You never know what bettas are going to do. Some of them are very aggressive to snails and try to kill the snails every time that you put them in. And other times, they ignore them. And it depends on the individual fish. Another thing to think about is that since your nerite snail is already in there, when you put the betta in, it might just think, oh, this is kind of normal. There's a nerite in here. I'm not going to bug it. That can help sometimes. If you put the snail in after the fish is already used to the home, it can be worse sometimes. So you have a pretty good chance that the betta will do okay with the nerite snail, but you might want to be prepared, if you have to move something. So I know you have more than one tank at your house, so maybe you can be ready if you need to take something out and put it somewhere else if the nerite and the betta don't get along. Now, zebra danios and white clouds are pretty gentle fish most of the time, but I would say if you're going to put a betta in there, don't put a really slow betta in there. And don't put a crown tail. That would be my suggestion. A crown tail betta has long little trailing edges on its fins that might look a little bit too tempting, maybe a little bit too like a worm or something like that. And the zebra danios or the white clouds might kind of pick at it. But if you get a betta with shorter fins...
Like a female.
Oh, a female would be a great idea, yeah. If you could get a female betta to put in there, and nowadays the females can be really brightly colored and beautiful. You could also get a placot male, which is a betta with short fins all the time. It doesn't grow long fins. Something like that, they would do better because they don't have tempting little trailing bits of fins as much, and they can swim faster, so they're likely to get along better with the zebra danios and the white clouds. So if you want to try it, I think you could, and I'm sure that the tank is already cycled and ready to go, so when you do that, I would suggest, though, that you quarantine the betta first, which is keeping it in a separate tank for a few weeks to make sure that it's healthy before you put it in with the other fish. But I think you should try it. It would be a good thing. It would probably work pretty well. So good luck, and we hope to hear from you, Tara. We hope to hear how your betta adventure goes.
Betta's awesome.
Yeah, Gwen had her own betta for how long? 3 years, about?
About.
Yeah, yeah, and he was a lot of fun, too. So, and we always have a couple of bettas around, don't we? We've got a couple right now. So, I think that's about it. So, Merry Christmas to those of you who celebrate Christmas, and if you celebrate something else, I hope you have a happy holiday. And if you don't celebrate anything, just have a happy time. So, I think that's about all, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, right. May the fish...
Be with you.
Well, let's try that one more time. May the fish...
Be with you.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us today, Gwen. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.